The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So at the press conference today, Boris Johnson announced a further step in easing the lockdown. James, what are the new measures?
So what he has said is that from Monday, six people can gather together in a garden. They can be from different households. That would allow two households to meet up if they wanted it in one of their back gardens, or you could have people from different households. You are meant to stay outside, stay 2 metres apart. If you use the facilities, you're meant to wipe everything down thoroughly and wash your hands. But it's, I think, the beginnings of something returning to normality. I think it's quite interesting quite a good way to think about it is that the government has a kind of R budget, what it can do while keeping the R that the government is so concerned about below one. And it is quite interesting that the government has essentially chosen to spend it on socialising rather than on trying to get the economy going. And I think part of the thinking behind that is people aren't going to go to shops until they feel and spend money until they feel that life has returned to something approaching some kind of normality.
And there was an interesting moment in the press conference when the Dominic Cummings issue came up and several journalists tried to ask Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance about their views on the issue. And this is what Boris Johnson had to say.
You've asked Chris and Patrick, but I'm going to interpose myself, if I may, and protect them from what I think would be an unfair and unnecessary attempt to ask a political question. It's very, very important that our medical officers and scientific advisers do not get dragged into what I think most people will recognise is fundamentally a political argument.
Katie, what did you make of that?
Yeah, slightly strange in the press conference. The first two questions to Boris Johnson were also involved questions directed at Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance about Dominic Cummings, asking whether, in their opinion, rules have been breached, things like that. And Boris Johnson said that he wasn't going to even let either of them answer that question because it was irrelevant. It wasn't something they should have to do from their position. It was too political a question. That was the first, Laura Koonsberg. Then when that was rejected, it went to Robert Peston, who tried to pick up the baton. And when that didn't work, and he had the same reply, you had the ingenuity to a degree of Sam Coates from Sky. He said, well, can we at least find out how they feel, almost, about not being able to answer the question? And then actually, both said that they did not want to answer that question. They wanted to stay out of politics. They were civil servants and didn't feel it was appropriate. Now, I think, first off, perhaps had they just been allowed to say for themselves on the first occasion that they didn't want to answer the question, I think it would have been a much better look. Already, though, you are getting complaints, which is often they do answer every question, a broad range of questions. So is it right that you can pick and choose? I think it will rage on a bit. But I do think back to over the weekend when Jenny Harris did the press conference with Grant Shapps, I think on the day their allegations had first broken. And she ultimately, I think, spent most of the press conference talking about safeguarding rules and whether or not this would apply to it. So I think perhaps having seen that, neither Whitty or Vallance really wanted to follow in those footsteps.
I think Katie's completely right. It would have been so much better if, in response to Laura Koonsberg's question, Chris Whitty and Patrick Vallance have just said what they said in response to Sam Coates, which is, they're civil servants, they don't want to get dragged into these political questions. People say, oh yes, there are public health implications to us. You can't get round the fact that a question about the Prime Minister's senior advisor is inherently a political question.
And this comes in the wake of Durham Police's statement today where they found that Dominic Cummings might have made a minor breach of the law when he went to Barnard Castle. Downing Street has said that they will continue to stand behind Dominic Cummings and that it's a case closed. James, do you think this is the end of the story, at least for now?
Well, I think Downing Street certainly hopes so. I mean, I suspect that this story will drag on for a little while longer, but we've certainly seen far fewer Tory MPs coming out today saying Dominic Cummings must go than we have seen in previous days. I think that Durham police have said that the initial journey to Durham, the decision to go and self-isolate there, was legal, was not in breach of the law. I think they say about the Barnard Castle trip that if he had been stopped on that drive, the police would probably have advised him to turn around and drive back to his property. But you know, they say that only if he had not obeyed that instruction would any further action have been taken. So the issue here is that those people who want Dominic Cummings to resign will say, look, even the police, even Durham police are saying that he might have breached the guidelines. But I think Downing Street will feel that they can stand by him. And I think talking to people in Downing Street this afternoon, the mood is certainly more bullish than it was 48 hours ago about Dominic Cummings' position and how much longer this story is going to dominate the news.
So he looks safe for now. But Katie, you write in this week's political column about the long-term political impact that the whole affair may have.
Yes, I mean, I think it's not, the story isn't just about Dominic Cummings now. It's clearly, it's about the Prime Minister's authority. So ultimately, that number 10 had put so much effort into keeping Dominic Cummings in place, I think means that ultimately there are people who don't particularly like Dominic Cummings who think that it's fairly disastrous now if the Prime Minister loses Dominic Cummings, because it will show that his authority is weakened. I get the sense, though, in terms of the parliamentary party, that at the moment things have calmed slightly. I think if we keep on this trajectory, it is the case in loads in government's views, and also actually even some Tory MPs who would rather Dominic Cummings be gone, that this story is slowly dying down. That could change, of course, but I think unless any new information comes to light which complicates it, raises questions, I think the sense that this is now, you know, the roughest part is out of the way.
And James, today, in a sort of welcome break from coronavirus news, although not necessarily on the most cheerful of topics, Dominic Raab has made a comment on China's national security law being put in place about Hong Kong. This law would basically allow China to set up national security agencies in Hong Kong, and critics say that it breaches one country, two systems. James, what did Dominic Raab say?
So what Dominic Raab said is that British overseas nationals in Hong Kong would now be entitled to come to the UK without a visa for 12 months, not 6 months, if China pressed ahead with this law. This would give them a path to citizenship that they don't currently have. Now, I think this is a good step. I think it is one of the marks of shame in Britain's recent history that not all Hong Kongers with British passports were offered the right to come and live here post the handover in 1997. I mean, they had British passports. They understandably believe that entitled them to come and live in this country. I also think it is striking that there is the statement today saying that the Chinese are looking like they're about to breach the Treaty on Hong Kong, which is lodged at the UN, comes from, you know, the UK, Australia, Canada and the US. And I think it marks a kind of concerted Western effort to push back on China. I think there is this view, I talk about it in the magazine this week, that with the world distracted by coronavirus and lots of countries dependent on China for supplies of personal protective equipment for medical professionals, that China is trying to take advantage of this moment to advance its own agenda. And you see that in Hong Kong, I think you see that in the South China Sea. And I think there is a desire to try and show China that the world is watching them. I think there is a question about what steps you're actually going to take. Dominic Raab has taken a step today. Again, from China's point of view, it's like you're giving people who don't like China, rubbishing the principle of one country, two systems, you're giving them an out opportunity to leave the country. I don't think that will distress Beijing too much. I think what will probably worry them a bit more is Mike Pompeo's decision to declare that, you know, China, Hong Kong no longer has sufficient autonomy to qualify for various trade privileges that it has in US law, which could affect Hong Kong's ability to function as a financial centre.
Katie, you and James interviewed Neil O'Brien, a Tory MP who's part of the China Research Group, the very China sceptic backbench group in the Conservative Party. Is this the party leadership recognising that there's a shift in the party now?
Yes, I think it is to a degree. I think that it's quite clear the Conservative Party as a whole has moved in its position on China. It's not just one faction. I think there was a point when it was perhaps a more hawkish MPs in the Tory party who were the most outspoken in terms of a hardening attitude towards China. But you have in the China Researcher Group with lots of people who I think would be regarded I never like using the word moderate because I think it means lots of things to different people, but tend to be regarded as moderate Tory MPs, you know, in the centre of the party. Neil O'Brien, someone who has never voted against the Conservative government, but had suggested when he spoke to James and myself that if the Huawei vote, that, which is coming up this summer, was as it was currently proposed, he might struggle to. So I think that that has meant the government's had to kind of face up to the reality of what the party's like. But I also think that it's the case that if you look at the things, the questions that the coronavirus pandemic has raised, there are figures in government independently who have been re-examining the our relationship with China and what needs to be done. I mean, clearly in James's brilliant cover piece, he lays it out in all specific details.
Check it in the post, didn't
you? Thanks. He lays it in all specific details. But I think, yes, the party is moving, but I also think that there are enough people independently in government who have also thought that actually, if you look at the direction, look at some of the questions raised from coronavirus and China's handling, they have wanted to take a different type of action.
I think there's also another factor at play here, which is the Keir Starmer's Labour Party. Earlier in the week, Lisa Nandy was criticising the government for not having done enough on Hong Kong. And I think that, you know, sometimes you see a shift in British politics and you realise quite quickly it's going to become a permanent shift. And I think this shift in terms of attitudes to China is going to become permanent because public opinion has moved and the Labour Party is now, is not kind of looking to criticise the Tory party for changing it, for the government, for changing its position on China to this tougher line. It's looking to outflank the government on the issue. And so I think you're going to see, you know, that effect means that, you know, I think this is going to become a kind of fairly settled position in British politics, that this country needs to reduce its dependence on China.
And that reducing of dependence on China is something we talk about on the weekly podcast this week as well, where James and I speak to Sir Oliver Letwin about James's cover piece. In the same episode, you can also find a discussion with myself, Katie, and Paul Goodman, editor of Conservative Home, where we talk about the lasting impact of the Cummings affair. Thanks for listening and join us again tomorrow.
The Spectator magazine combines incisive political analysis with books and arts reviews of unrivaled authority. Try a month in print and online for free. And, for a limited time only, get a free wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger to start today.